It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Me, Ernest Hancock, and another independence declaring kind of guy, Mr. William Bupert. He's a regular columnist on lewrockwell.com. He's going to be a speaker at this year's Freedom Summit. FreedomSummit.com. Go to FreedomSummit.com. You're going to hear William Bupert. He's been addressing a lot of groups on a lot of things I find of interest. And the one thing that it's hard to find somebody that knows anything about the subject I want to discuss, and that is the Articles of Confederation. We had the Declaration of Independence, and they go, hey, man, we just declared our independence, and we're going to have these free states, and we're going to have a, yeah, we'll kind of, what's up, and we'll be buds and everything, and we'll confederate and be our own free kind of whatever. And then all of a sudden, here comes Alexander Hamilton. No. We got to have a central authority so we can have a bank. Need to have a bank. Well, I need to talk to somebody that knows what's up and give us some history and Articles of Federation. I give you William Bupert. And, you know, we just had Karen Kwiatkowski on the last hour, and she alluded to the fact that you're military too, ain't you?
I am. And, Karen is probably one of the keenest libertarian defense writers out there, and I really enjoy her work.
No, she's a good friend. She's, you know, when we found out that there was a libertarian in the Pentagon, we were like, whoa. You know, so it was, and she was really, Colonel Hackworth had his own, blog that he published her stuff while she was still active in the Air Force, saying, man, all this stuff. I'm sitting here as Rumsfeld and Cheney's walking by me every day, lying sacks. And she was in the North Africa desk, and she processed a lot of the intelligence that they would then, it would go to Bush, and they would just change it and lie. And she's going, they are lying us into this war. And it was so, and it goes, we could have gone on for hours and hours with her on so much of this stuff, but what we talked about was the beast that needs to be fed, and that's this military-industrial complex, and they're freaking out about the U.S. economy, not because they give a crap about you and me, but because they're worried about their paychecks and all their contractors and all the complexes wanting theirs. But all of this, like Lysander Spooner said, he goes, if the Constitution didn't cause all these problems, it sure as heck didn't prevent it. And I'm going, well, there was something else before that. There was something else that I don't know how did it work. It seems like we were doing okay. Called the Articles of Confederation. Tell us everything.
I will. And Ernie, thanks for having me on the program. One side note, if I may. When I retired in 2003, I think that Karen Kwiatkowski and myself and probably a host of other officers who were in the military at the time, we saw the writing on the wall, and we saw that the 21 causes belli, that the reasons to go to war that Bush came up with from his Office of Special Plans, all that stuff was cooked. Here's the amazing part about the WMD beef is that when you think about it, if you put together nuclear radiological devices, there is no way in this universe or the next that you can get rid of the residuals that are on, in, and about the ground on which you've had your centrifuges, your laboratories, and all of that stuff. There's no way to do it. We have combed north to south, east to west, the entirety of what is now known as Iraq, that curious country that was developed on a napkin in the 1920s by Winston Churchill. And there's no sign whatsoever. The bottom line is those WMDs, apart from the chemical weapons that we help him develop, were never there.
Yeah, but we still had a war.
Yes, we did. But what did Randolph Bourne say about war?
The health of the state.
Exactly, and that's why it was done.
You know, this is we just spent the last hour on that. I'm trying to get back to where this all began. It was always about money and bankers and, you know, consolidation of power, and you can make all the laws you want. I don't care as long as I get to print the money.
It's funny you should say that, Ernie, because the Articles of Confederation were overwhelmed by a political coup in 1787 called the Ratification of the Constitution, in which from 1987 1787 to 1791, from authorship to final ratification, they did what their charter didn't allow them to do. They originally came in there to take the Articles of Confederation and improve them, modify them, and make them more effective. Whatever the heck that means, that's not what happened. What happened is exactly what you're alluding to. Hamilton needed, and Washington needed, a gun in the hands of the national state, and they needed a device to give them 100% extractive power from the people of the respective states. But they needed a way to reach over the heads of the states and say, listen, we want to relieve you of all those awful war debts that you assumed during our 8-year divorce war from the United Kingdom. Here's the deal. I'll relieve you of all those debts if you'll give me ultimate taxing authority. To which all the states, there being politicians, said, well, maybe so. We'll consider that in our chambers, whether bicameral or unicameral. The rest is history, and between 1791 and 1803, just the first 10 or 12 years, we see taxes imposed on stamps, on documents, on homes, on land, on slaves, on excises, you name it. Because
whiskey.
exactly, because in 1794, a mere 3 years after ratification, what happens? Washington
whiskey
and
rebellion.
His standing army are going after tax resistors. Tax resistors, a mere 3 years after this glorious revolution is in place.
Well, you know, one of the other things that I think we should bring up is that when they did the Constitution, Alexander Hamilton and friends were out there buying up all these printed continentals. You know, it's not worth a continental. It was the script or the money that they had created that created this kind of debt. And then they go, oh, we're going to pay all this off. You know, don't worry about it. But, oh, by the way, we're going to get one-to-one payback on something that we just paid 5 cents for. And they made an enormous amount of money because people didn't think, yeah, this script, it's not worth anything. It's, yeah, whatever, I kept it. You want to give me a nickel for it? Whatever, here. And then they went and made bank. And then the first thing they did when they did the Constitution, what was the first thing? Bank of England. You know, we go into, you know, $350,000 was like real money back then. We went into immediate debt. That was the first, you know, we need to get you in debt. We go around doing this economic hitman crap all over the world doing the same thing to everybody. That's how we think this is new. This has already been done forever and always. Amen. And the United Kingdom came back and did it to us again. Yeah, you can have your little White House and all that kind of stuff until 1812, whatever that was about. And then we have I want to get, why did they want to replace the Articles of Confederation? What was the reason, and what was wrong with it? What was it? What did it do?
Well, what the Articles of Confederation did was it decentralized the entire way things were done at the time, from the time it was adopted in 1781 to the time that it was ripped asunder in the political coup in 1787. And some of the differences between the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution was, under the Articles, Congress could not levy taxes. As a matter of fact, there was no system of federal courts. There was no provision to regulate interstate trade. There was no executive power with the president. There had to be absolute unanimity for any amendments that had to come about instead of two-thirds. Each state received one vote, regardless of its size. Congress could not draft troops because they could only draw from the state forces that were available at hand. There was no interstate commerce clause. There was a complicated system of arbitration between the states, but that's to be expected when it's a confederation, much like the Swiss cantons. Sovereignty resided in the states, and 9 of 13 were needed to approve legislation instead of 50% plus one of both houses, plus the signature of the president. You know, what that all comes down to, that laundry list that I just went over, is it shows you that for the centralizing neo-monarchist bankster politicians of Hamilton, Madison's, Adams, and Washington's ilk, They needed a gun in the hands of the national state. They needed a way to push people around. They needed a way to get down to the individuals past the state legislatures and say, you're going to give it up or you're going to be fined, maimed, jailed, or killed.
You know, one thing that a lot of people don't know, John Adams, he was just as happy calling him king. I mean, you know, we can have a king of the United States or whatever. I mean, he was not necessarily, you know, the good guy in a lot of this. He was wanting to play politics.
Well, that's why HBO did the biopic, Ernie.
Exactly. And later, if you read the book or listened to the book on tape or whatever, I've done that, and it was a very interesting story. But it was years later before he and Thomas Jefferson reconciled, because Jefferson knew what this whole thing was about. And, you know, thank goodness for him. But, you know, still, we are left with the Constitution. But I want to learn more about the Articles of Confederation with William Buport when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit. You stay right there.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I think it's safe to say he's for freedom along with me. Well, what we're talking about is the Articles of Confederation, and if we go to it, the first article, Article 1, the style of the Confederacy shall be, I guess the title, the United States of America. Article 2.
And perpetual union.
And perpetual union, where does it say that?
It's under the Articles of Confederation. That's the official title.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, I don't see it here in Article 1. I guess it's in the preamble here. But
it
we
is.
Got
yep.
Article 2. Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. So the whole concept was the Articles of Confederation was such that each of the states was their own country, right?
You know, this is an anti-federalist document, and a lot of the contemporaries at the time looked to the Swiss canton system, which even today has significant veto power over what the central government tells them to do. So, in essence, you and I have our own ideas about government and what level we'd like to see them at, Ernie, and they're very
small,
similar, nearer to zero than
none.
So this would even be an imperfect document for us. When I had my debate at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas with Dr. Howe, one of the things I said in my own preamble was, I said, what makes the Articles of Confederation so attractive to me is their very ineffectiveness. Their ineffectiveness as far as allowing centralizing tendencies to take supremacy and take away state sovereignty.
Well, that was the whole point of the Articles of Confederation, written by people that were in the midst of a revolution.
Amen.
Against central power. They wanted to make this a document not to consolidate power over the states. That was the whole point.
You know, and you hit on it earlier when you talked about debt. This is all about the ability to use those 13-plus states as we evolved over time simply as a collateral device or a revenue device to increase funded debt. Now, here's the curious thing I learned in my research about this for funded debt. The way the United Kingdom ran their empire was that they made this promise. They said, we're going to maintain a AAA credit rating. We are going to service this debt assiduously. We are going to pay it all on time, and we are going to pay it in hard currency or specie or whatever you specify in the contract, but we will never, ever pay the principal, but we will service the interest. That is what we have done since the day the Constitution was adopted, with the exceptions of 1834 and 35, when we had no deficit. We have had a debt and deficit the entirety of our existence, and the Constitution was the document that put that in place.
So that they could perpetually get revenue from the former colonies.
Which gives them power.
This is which was all the more reason why they had to do away with the Articles of Confederation. And one of the things I remember, there was a quote from Art Hamilton. He said, "Well, you know, I think it was one of the Federalist Papers or something." He was going, "You know, if we don't have this central taxing authority, how will we ever fund a sustained war?"
Exactly.
And I'm like, "Well, that's a good enough reason not to do it right there."
You are so correct, because the other thing about militias, and this was written about contemporary to the time, was militias cannot do imperial mischief, because they will defend their own soil, their own land, and they'll bleed for it if they need to, if they are invaded. But as far as sending them into other nation states to make, you know, martial mischief, they ain't going to do it, because they're militia forces.
It was so that they translated a lot of this in, you know, kind of, you know, paid lip service to a lot of the stuff. If you read the Articles of Confederation, you can see kind of they allude to it in the Constitution, but they always gave them a little bit more wiggle room. And then, of course, I tell you the one thing that was different. They gave themselves the three branches of government, with one of those being the court system that gets to determine whether anything the other two do is constitutional or not. And I'm going, well, of course they're going to rule in their favor of them, because they're them.
You know who pointed that out to me? It was Kenneth Royce in that brilliant book, Hologram of Liberty, where he said Marbury versus Madison in 1803 took the unfinished Article 3 in the Constitution, polished that baby off, and said, sure, wink, wink, nod, nod, will be the checks and balances. Tom Woods, in a speech when he was talking about his new book, Nullification, he said that his research revealed that between 1935 and 1997, I hope I have those dates right, the federal court system did not invalidate one major regulatory regime. Well, duh. What do you expect? It's just what you were saying, Ernie. Of course they're going to rubber stamp the expansion of power. Is an organization that's involved in the investment and expansion of its own power ever going to make itself go on a diet or behave itself?
No, they cover up their weight with those big black robes. You know, this is so obvious what they do. These guys, as you get closer to politics and you're actually involved, and we had, did you watch the Arizona State gubernatorial debate last night?
I did not, because I don't watch television.
Oh, man, you got to go watch on Freedom's Phoenix. Barry kicked their butt. Jan Brewer imploded. It was the most embarrassing. I had to pause it, and, you know, I had my DVR. I had to pause it and bury my face in a pillow so many times. I was so embarrassed, you know, by, you know, Goddard, Attorney General Run, and them. You know, but once you get in to this kind of, this close to this, and you know the people involved, I knew this would happen. I ran against Jan Brewer in 06 for Secretary of State. She is, you know, dumber than a bag of rocks. And I'm telling you, if she gets more than 10-20 second sound bites on Fox, she implodes. This was inevitable. Well, what you find out as you get in, these are the people that are selecting the judges. These are the ones that send to the state Supreme Court. These are the ones, executives, that are sending to the U.S. Supreme Court. For what reasons? To do what they want them to do. And you think by putting a black robe on them, somehow it makes them holy or something, or appoint them for life, they'll do good then. I mean, no, they're not. And when you got, it was Patrick Henry was going on about 4 hours before the state legislature, he's governor of Virginia, don't ratify this Constitution thing. It's all about the power, the power, the power. And what happens when you got the executive and the legislative and judicial lined up against the rights of the individual? You're in a free speech zone. I love telling that all the time, because it gives people an understanding of what we're really up against. We're not to be able to count on some separation of powers. There is no separation of power. It's us versus them.
That's exactly what it is. You know, it's so keen that you bring up this whole point about talking about the articles, because until people educate themselves about what the actual foundational documents are and what that argument was between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, because it was so critical to the formation of what we have today, because you and I both hear from the usual suspects and the Tea Parties and everybody from left to right, well, if we just got back to the original Constitution, everything would be okay. To which I always say, well, guess what? You're there. You've arrived, and whatever you have right now, because of what you said about Spooner earlier, we're already there. And this whole thing about unconstitutional, that word has no descriptive power whatsoever.
None, because it's constitutional right up until they say it's not. So they get to do whatever the heck they want in the meantime.
Exactly.
I've seen this happen before. I've run for Congress against John Shagg, and he had tons of these things. You're in debates and so on. I'm going, how in the heck can you determine this to be constitutional? He goes, it's constitutional until the courts say it's not.
And isn't that interesting? Because I would tell you that even those sitting in Congress have never read the Constitution from back to front. And you'll also notice, from front to back, you know, the entirety of the text. You'll also notice that every time our rights are in the hazard, Ernie, it is, and Mark Victor can probably attest to this, we don't go to the body of Constitution to defend ourselves from government. We go to those Bill of Rights that were given to us by the Anti-Federalists, which the Federalists wanted no part of. They didn't want that Bill of Rights because that put even more restrictions.
But that was the compromise. That was the compromise they had to have in order to stop another revolution. And it was right. They were sitting there going, oh, no, 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 no. And what did they do in the Constitution? What's one of the first things? Eminent domain. We have all the land belongs to the central authority. Don't think so? Yeah, look up the Kelo decision. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and William Buport. More on the Articles of Confederation in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, we need to be looking. They don't want us to look, neither. I tell you, the Articles of Confederation, I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I even heard about it while I was from 1st to 12th grade. The Articles of what? I mean, you know, people don't even know that there was an entire government that was set up between the Revolutionary War and its end and Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. That for years we had a different system, and the very people that we were fighting against were involved in creating a new system because they didn't like this decentralized individual state thing going on. They're like, oh, no, 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 no. Article 6 of the Articles of Confederation is no state without the consent of the United States with the United lowercase in Congress assembled shall send any embassy to or receive any embassy from or enter into any conference, agreement, alliance, or treaty with any king, prince, or state, on and on and on, all the stuff you can't do. And they reference the United States as United States. You know, the state of whatever, the state of Israel, the state of whatever, you know, you have these states, these countries, these sovereign entities that were united, but not this kind of title United States of America, as if it was, it doesn't even mean the same thing as what it originally meant, does it?
Well, you know, Ernie, you're right, and it's interesting that you say that about you saw it when you were in elementary or middle school or high school.
Or I did.
Because the lion's share, I would say 90%, because I had to put together a library to get ready for both the article and my debate at Freedom Fest in July, and I had to put together a library for this. Well, what I discovered was that 90% of all books on the Articles of Confederation are simply these large print textbooks that you usually find in civics classes in the government schools. And you and I both know what civics class is, how to be a good subject. That's what they should call it. Not a citizen, but a subject. What I did run across that was interesting, though, is, and I'm probably the only human in North America who has read this, is I got all the foreign policy documents that have been put together in a three-volume series numbering almost 3,400 pages of the foreign policy that took place between these states and themselves and these states and other external entities. Because the argument that we hear so often is that, well, bigger is better and that the United States can handle that, but the state of Arizona couldn't possibly handle its own border. And the state of Vermont couldn't possibly take care of unemployment concerns. And the state of California couldn't possibly take care of import-export relationships with other countries. Well, you know what? That's just a lot of rationalized BS on the part of the neo-monarchist centralizers.
And North Dakota has its own bank. It's the only one that's got 3-point-something% unemployment and no debt. You know, they're out of the Federal Reserve System, and everybody's looking to North Dakota going, how'd you guys do that?
And another thing, and you had raised this earlier, This established the first of four national banks that we would suffer under that are referred to as reserve systems over time. But that's why they needed the Constitution, because Hamilton, Washington, and all the rest of the mercantilist elite in the Northeast wanted to ensure that the banksters and the neo-monarchists and all the rest of the centralizers would have a weapon, a tool, so that they could bash this over the heads of the states and say, whatever happened under the Articles of Confederation, that doesn't apply anymore, because this new document that is so celebrated with the parchment idolatry that you and I see all the time, it's been a brilliant propaganda effort, because even the Tea Party said, well, you know, let's get back to the Constitution. Well, that's not constitutional. Well, the original Constitution doesn't embrace any of this. Crap! That's just a bunch of BS. It embraces everything that we currently suffer under. And you were quoting Spooner, where he said that if it can't stop it or if it endorses it, it is unfit to exist.
You know, the one thing that if I looked at, I tell you who kind of got me on this way of thinking is our good friend Butler Schaefer. And he's a law professor at Southwestern University in Los Angeles.
Brilliant guy.
And he's, you know, was the law professor of Mark Victor. You know, that's how they know each other. That's how we've gotten to know him. And he mentored him. And one thing he said one time is he goes, you know, if you were a king and you wanted to take over a country and you had the ability to declare eminent domain, you had ultimate authority over all the land, you had the ability to regulate commerce and the power to tax, what the heck else would you need?
You wouldn't. I mean, you would have it, and that's exactly what this provided them. And you know, you mentioned earlier that they just come out of this eight-year war. They were exhausted. But people were practically up in arms when they got a hold of what this Constitution was about. As a matter of fact, in the only popular plebiscite, the only popular vote this was put before on Rhode Island, this lost 7-1. The Constitution lost 7-1.
Yeah, but what did they do?
Not only because the Anti-Federalists were quite rhetorically gifted, it's also because people said, wait, we just bled for 8 years, and you want to take this system and impose it on us, and it's no different from what we suffered under before?
Okay, now what did they do to Rhode Island, though? Rhode Island says, yeah, we're not part of this Constitution thing. We're out of here. What did they do to them?
Oh, they did all kinds of nasty stuff to them, where they tried to take their import-export abilities. They tried to remove port licenses. They did all kinds of strong-arming efforts.
They boycotted them.
The same kind of strong-arming efforts we saw in Maryland during the War of Northern Aggression.
They boycotted them. They tried to close all kind of commerce with them.
Yes.
They did
yes.
everything they could, even though the people didn't care. You know, the people in Virginia, yeah, whatever. You know, this is all this elite banker mentality controlling interest. We make all the cash. Just give me a mechanism by which we can get it. I mean, that's what this was all about.
You know, it all comes down to the creation of fiat currency and the protection thereof. That's what, you know, when you strip away all the veneer and all the patriotic gore and all the propaganda that has painted this wonderful picture of the Constitution, it all comes down to two things: extractive authority and fiat currency.
And that's why, you know, when Abraham Lincoln started doing this, his own bank, his own greenbacks, is funding his creating his own debt. It's got its own problems with that. But the central banks around the world said, no. We're not going to have you doing interest-free debt that you guys create without us. And that's what, you know, you get assassinated, you had stuff like that. And then JFK did the same thing. He was getting ready to do the same thing. Even for a little while, we had back silver certificates or something. I mean, you know, for like 9 months or something, all of a sudden, then you wake up dead. So I'm going, you know, this is such a common thread throughout the history of the United States and the world. It's all about the money.
It is, and I would urge your reader, your audience, and the readers in your audience to take advantage of the fact that don't just listen to Ernie and Bill. Do your own research. You know, Google the Articles of Confederation, read Kenneth Royce, read the Anti-Federalist Papers. There's 85 of them available on the web that are just a keystroke away. You will be awed by the Enlightenment, by the literacy, the long history that goes into their writing, the sheer eloquence of it. But the Anti-Federalists get short shrift in celebration. We're always hearing the noise about, oh, the Federalist Papers. Wow, what an amazing document. What And in the end, it's nothing more than a very sophisticated rationalization
it
to
was
put a yoke
promise
around individuals beyond the states.
It was just the promise. And the reality, you go, you have time passes, and you get to the point, it's 200 and whatever years later, and you have this enormous space between what's promised and what the reality is, and at some point, that's when you have revolutions. You know, let's go back to this one thing on the, I just wanted to brought this up, because all you gotta do is you, Google JFK silver money. On June 4th, 1963, a little known attempt was made to strip the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to loan money to the government at interest. On that day, JFK signed Executive Order Number 11110 that returned to the U.S. government the power to issue currency without going through the Federal Reserve. That made certain he would be dead.
I don't know, because I don't have any knowledge of that, Ernie. So I'll just
it's like 5-6 months later, done, dead. 5-6 months later, dead, 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 dead. Executive Order Number 11110, four ones and a zero. You guys go look that up, because I'm telling you, there's a common theme from the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, all this other stuff that's going on. The Federal Reserve is what, the fourth, fifth attempt?
It is the fourth attempt. Yeah, the fourth attempt. And what else is interesting is that at the time when they were trying to create this fiat currency, they ran into a lot of trouble. But guess who came to the rescue to help them subsidize and create the fiat currency?
Oh,
the
Bank
United
of
Kingdom
somebody.
And the Bank of England.
Yep. You know, one thing a lot of people don't know also is that Art Hamilton's father-in-law was a merchant in Manhattan that was all buddies with the Bank of England.
Well, fortunately, Hamilton was taking care of Burr in 1804.
Yeah, but you know what? Aaron Burr should be shot for taking so long to shoot Art Hamilton. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and William Buport. Articles of Confederation. Did you even know they existed and why they went away? Well, they might be making a comeback out of just cause when this one falls. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Oh, on the eve. You know, I don't know. We're kind of past the eve. It's like you know, Destruction
don't
Day.
You
know, the one thing, William, I wanted to make sure you, I wanted to do this real quick. Nick Barnett is a young college student that's down here today making signs. And after the primary, you'll like this. I'll tell you the signs that they're making. This is good. This is good. This is good. Ben Quayle, Dan Quayle's son, is the victorious in the Republican primary, which means he's probably going to be whatever congressman here in Northern Phoenix. Well, we have a libertarian can't run against him, Michael Schoen, which is one of the sons of the founder of U-Haul. So he's not going to spend a bunch of money. He knows better. He wants to have some fun. And, you know, we can't really help his campaign. I don't even care. I want to play politics. But there's something that we can do just to have some fun like we always do. But these guys came up and they're making these big signs or tall signs, and it has, you know, a quail, you know, like a stencil of a quail bird, and then a smaller one, and it says, what does it say, Nick?
It says, more quails from the bushes.
Oh, you know that's going to hurt. So they put a bunch of those up. That's going to be fun. Now, what he wanted to say was he's taking a history class this semester coming up, and he told me a story about the book, and I want him to share it with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just started this week going through it's a survey of American history to 1865. So, of course, the Articles and Confederation are right in there. So I was paging through the book. There's about a blurb, maybe half a paragraph, on the Articles of Confederation. So the professor passed out note cards and wanted to get our feedback on, you know, what things we were interested in. She'd try to touch on those a little bit more. Got to pick five things. I put Articles of Confederation for all five. So we'll see how that goes.
Outstanding. But remember that you are in a government school, so they're going to do what serves their needs.
Yeah, no, and my point is that you have a textbook, and that's all you get. Articles of Confederation. Because I remember when they did the History Channel thing as the History of Us. And as I was watching this, I said, okay, I'll give it a shot until, you know, it makes me mad. And it didn't take long because they went, you know, George Washington, he fought here in Bunker Hill in Yorktown or whatever the heck it was at the end. I think it was Yorktown. He goes in, he says, and then he's president of the United States. He went right from there to president of the United States, and everything in between was totally ignored.
Of course it was. But the bottom line is they wanted to get rid of the Articles of Confederation because they would not have the power to push them around. I mean, here's the glorious thing about the Confederation, in my mind, in all confederations, is that if one of those states becomes oppressive, let's say they make sure that everybody has to be a union worker, and they make government really oppressive, and they increase taxes. Well, what are people going to do if there's not a Berlin Wall erected? They're leaving. And if they leave, well, then their tax base leaves. Because in the end, the government is simply a cattle farmer and we are on the feedlot. That's the relationship taken down to its simplest terms. And what Washington and Hamilton wanted to do was they wanted to have a national feedlot.
You know, this is a concept that – have you been watching some of Stephen Molyneux's stuff?
That's exactly where I got it from.
You know, that guy, he's going to be a speaker at the Freedom Summit this year.
Is he confirmed now?
Yeah.
That is excellent news.
You know, this is, I had seen his stuff like a couple of years ago, and it was called The Matrix Part 13. And if you just Google The Matrix Part 13, Stefan, you know, that it'll come up right there. But Stefan, S-T-E-F-A-N, Molyneux, French spelling. And what happened is he just makes these podcasts, and they're very popular. And I think he was surprised at how popular it was until he went to the Porcupine Festival in northern New Hampshire. And everybody was like, whoa, Stefan's in. And I just go, Stefan, you have no idea, man. I go, that one episode that he did, he had a point that he was making. He goes, look, when you're looking at a map of the world and you see all these different colors for different countries and so on, all you're looking at is farms. He goes, this is just different livestock management tools that they're using, these governments, just to milk you. And he goes, you know, they found out here in America that by having free range, you know, livestock, that they were more productive and they became a lot more. But he goes, the end of a free range, and he shows this field with a bunch of chickens, it is not freedom, and then he shows a box of Chicken McNuggets, you know? And I'm going, yeah. I'm going, man, you are the man. You
it's
are the man.
It's brilliant marketing, and it's really a good way to communicate the freedom philosophy.
You're not free if you got somebody telling you what freedoms you have. It doesn't work that way. You know what my freedom is? My freedom is I do what the heck I want, unless I'm bothering somebody, you know? And the only purpose of government, Declaration of Independence even said that, the only purpose of government is the defense of individual rights, and we're not going to tell you what kind of government you're going to have, a constitutional, republic, democratic, blah, 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 monarchy. Well, we don't care. They didn't even address that. They just said, we know how to tell when a government's bad. When it's not defending individual rights, they're bad.
Well, Ernie, I don't know how we're going to fight the constitutional idolatry because it is so deep and permeated in the American system that I've mentioned before that from left to right, everybody has a soft spot in their heart. And, you know, for the longest time in my own life, my own adult life, and I'm a pretty reflective guy like you, I was a parchment worshiper. I thought the Constitution could do no wrong. And then I finally woke up and I started doing my own research. Thanks to guys like Spooner and Royce and reading the Anti-Federalist and that kind of stuff, I came to my senses.
Yeah, you know, I was on the road during the Ron Paul Revolution. I was in South Carolina, I think it was, and this one meetup group there, and they were a group of the older guys. Before I left, they came up to me and said, you know, we knew you'd appreciate this, and they gave me a hardbound copy of all the Anti-Federalist papers.
Oh,
and
that's
I go, oh, see, you doing it to the right guy. I'm going, thank you very much. And, you know, and the thing is as you read that, they're so prophetic. quick. They knew exactly what was going to happen and why. They knew the people behind it. They knew why they had every one of those provisions in the Constitution, the power it gave them, how they were going to use it, how they were going to twist and interpret it the way they wanted. You know, because they didn't elect the Supreme Court justices. You know, they were their boys that got picked from the beginning.
Now, Ernie, are you saying, though, that just because a private citizen becomes a public citizen, they do not become more virtuous and they are not less prone to corruption?
No, they're more. That, you know, this is one thing. It's all about the ring of power. You know, they always go around, the constitutionalists will say, you know, if we could just change the person that wears the ring, if we can put a different guy behind the lever of power, well, we get our guy in there, well, gosh darn it, it'll be okay. And I'm going, no. Did you ever consider that it was the power that was the problem?
Well, you know what? It's Buport's corollary to Acton's axiom, and in the end, it reads, power attracts the corruptible.
Now, corrupted.
That too? Okay, I'll give you that too. But I think that you have to have a certain degree of psychopathy or sociopathy or a combination thereof to wish to rule over others.
You know, that's the biggest criticism that libertarians have. Oh, you guys are just, you know, gadflies. You're going to give it to this guy instead of this guy, and those votes belong to somebody else, and you're just in there, you're just causing a ruckus. And I'm going, that was the point. You know, we don't want to be in charge. I don't want to be a master, and I don't want to be, you know, a slave. So
Ernie,
I'm like,
it's because you and I don't have a preference for evil.
Well, some people do, and we have created a mechanism by which they could wield it over us. That is the problem.
Yes.
And I'm glad you came on and talked about this. Is there any more you want to talk about the Articles of Confederation? How great a document was it? I mean, do we want to go back to that? I mean,
yes, you know, here's the bottom line. We can't go back to a vacuum. And I think that secession is inevitable, and I think that devolution and dissolution of these United States is going to happen in the next 10 years. Whether the federal government likes that or not, and most likely they don't, it's going to happen because all the planets have aligned, and economically we are a wreck, socially we are a wreck, and this whole device that they've cobbled together over the past 200 years is coming to an end, and people better get ready for it. But people will not want to assign a vacuum, in other words, something that you and I would like where there's no government. They'll want to go back to a reference point. So if the Articles of Confederation is what we have, and it's a choice between that and the Constitution, I will take the former any day of the week.
You know, there's also another advantage is that in getting the Constitution, they kind of had to violate the deal they made with the states when they did the Articles of Confederation anyway. So they got a legal argument, too.
Well, the only reason that probably wouldn't stand is that all the robed government employees are under a constitutional imprimatur.
Oh, no, I don't need them to say it. I just, you know, I just need me to know it. You know, I'm going, yeah, I don't care what you say. We already passed that got over that bridge a long
exactly.
time ago. Well, you know, this is, and you're, why 10 years? I mean, why that long? I mean, wow, man, do we got to go through that long a depression?
Well, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. People are asking me all the time. They say, Bill, when's it going to end? I don't have the answer.
Well, I don't either. Like, you know, a lot of times I can say, you know, I may not know what the answer is, but I know what it's not. Let me tell you what it's not. It is not given a monopoly on force to someone to put a gun to my head, to steal my stuff, to redistribute to someone else. That makes them bad guys. Alter or abolish. That was what this country is based on from the very beginning. The only purpose of government is the defense of our rights, not to have some kind of piece of paper or parchment with an embossed seal on a clipboard with a guy with a uniform and a fine hat at my front door with the always available gun saying that my children belong to the king to go fight in some far-off land war in some sand heap somewhere. This is what we are coming to understand. And thanks to guys like William Buport for helping us understand it. William, thank you very much. We'll be right back with Barry Hess.